Views on this program are opinions of dental industry experts and not necessarily those of dentist advisors. Opinions shared in the following interview do not constitute personal financial advice. This program is furnished by Dentist Advisors, a registered investment advisor.
This is Dentist Money. Now, here's your host, Reese Harper.
Welcome to the Dentist Money Show, where we help dentists make smart financial decisions. I'm your host, Reese Harper, on site at Yankee Dental Congress 2017. Here with my newfound friend, Pete Cargill, skier extraordinaire, living in both Colorado and the New England area. So he gets a little bit of snow here and a little bit in Colorado.
Can't beat it. Can't beat it.
Yeah, dude, I'm surprised we had so much in common. So it's been fun to get to know you, and I'm excited to cover the subject matter today because I think it's really crucial, and it's a really valuable topic for dentists. And we're going to talk today about the importance of whether you should use other resources to find people and help grow your practice, whether you should find someone to help hire people, what kind of job boards and sites are available to find the right talent for your practice. If you're anything like me, it's difficult sometimes to get a large enough sample size of potential hires to know which one to pick. And that's where Pete has a lot of expertise in this area. Pete's the CEO and founder of a few different job companies. One's called Dent Reps, and I'll let him talk a little bit about each throughout the interview today, but I kind of want to jump right into some questions, Pete, and get your feedback. What do you think some of the biggest challenges are that dentists face when recruiting? What are some of the biggest, you know, things that they tell you in conversations you've had with people over the years?
You know, I think the biggest thing for people is, one, the time. It takes a long time to hire people. And with time, it takes a long time to source people. We talk about trying to hire for the right fit a lot. You could have the best hygienist in the world, go into the best dental practice in the world and be hired, and it may not be the right fit. So you want to make sure you're doing a lot of work up front and make sure that you're finding that culturally, clinically, that you work together and it's a team environment. You're never going to find the perfect match.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure that you have the proper team. So it's a matter of really sitting down, determining what your goals, problems, and needs are within your own office. So timing, yeah, and really setting aside time to do that.
So most dentists just don't take the time to, like, if it's like me, I've hired really fast sometimes, and that can bite me in the butt, you know. Out a couple months in, I'll find out maybe that I rushed it, or that I overlooked a particular skill set, or I forgot that their personality had this thing that was kind of going to grade on me or someone else in our team, right? I mean, that's a challenge, I think, that people have. When you're really busy and you're an entrepreneur, you don't take time in the hiring process to find the right fit.
Absolutely. If you look at your bottom line, if you look at your income statement, it's probably your biggest expense on your books.
No question. I mean, it's 20 to 30% of the sales, that, you know, or more.
Yeah. If you don't take time and focus on who you're trying to hire, you're going to not only upset the apple cart, your existing office and your staff, but you may have to find another person if you go that way. And that's what we try and hear. We're here to try and help resolve some of those issues. We don't have the 100% solution. But hey, listen, I've been part of dentistry since 2002. And I've seen and helped a lot of people get hired, which is why we came into this business. And trust me, I've never hired someone within the dental office. I've hired someone on the sales force being part of a number of sales companies. But I've made my mistakes, which is how I learned in part of a different industry. I hired three people right off the bat, seasoned, veteran, experienced, well knowledgeable in the industry. And I've had to let go of those three people at the same time because I made a mistake, and that's why I'm here. And I think I'm.
They say even the best hiring managers get, like, you know, the best hiring managers in the world get three out of four right, or two out of four right. You know, it's just not, it's not easy, and they have the best experience, the best resources available, and most people are probably getting one out of four right. You know, or, you know, maybe two out of four right. It's just really hard if you're getting 25% of the people you're hiring are staying, you know, or less.
Absolutely. When you look at a dental office, you have so many different levels of education, experience, and people.
Yeah.
And personalities. So you really got to define that. And they do become your family. I mean, you're with them 10 hours a day. So you're all spending a lot of time with them. So mistakes are made. It's okay as long as you learn from those mistakes. And if you do take the time to learn from that, you're going to make the next best hire. Part of the problem is trying to find the right people too, the sourcing part of it.
Yeah, so you're saying there's two different components here. We got sourcing, which is the fancy word for getting a lot of names.
Right.
Right? And then we've got the fit, which is like trying to narrow down all of these names to find the right person. So I'm some random small practice out in the middle of North Dakota, and I don't know like what to do. I'm going to go hire someone. Like, what resources are available for me to find, to do, like, what resources are available for me if I'm trying to find an assistant or a hygienist or an associate?
Absolutely. You know, I think a lot of people will talk me out of what I'm about to tell you in terms of, I provide solutions for clients. I'm not the end all be all for everything.
Yeah.
You know, for me, it's all about building relationships with people. I've been in sales for 20 years of my, since I've graduated from undergrad and grad school. And for me, it's building relationships and a network. So you're always trying to look for your next employee. You're always trying to find your next patient. So if you're in a small town like North Dakota, a state like North Dakota, and you're in a small town, you know, you need to be setting up or establishing yourself within your community. And your community can be your association, getting to know people there, meeting other dentists, meeting other offices. You know, it's not a competition, especially in those rural markets or even urban markets. You want to make sure that you're setting up your proper network. And that's just meeting other people, collecting cards, staying in touch with them. And then when you do go to find and hire somebody, you know, I like to call it reactive versus proactive hiring. Reactive is when all of a sudden someone at the front desk or a dental assistant leaves today.
I got to hire someone tomorrow.
Yeah. And I got to hire someone today, and you have a knee jerk reaction. It's reactive.
Whoever's available.
Yeah.
And you bring them in. I've seen people literally hire someone because that was the person that called and talked to them that day. Like, it's just like, you
absolutely.
Know, you're the kind of the first person I've been talking to. You sound fine. And I need to have someone here tomorrow. So are you available? Like, it's, I mean, it's that knee-jerk sometimes, right?
And it's the reactive side of it that really hurts you.
Yeah.
And I was with the dentist last week. He's a good friend of mine, and he lost one of his front desk people to something that happened for 3 months. So he went and called the person he had fired 2 weeks earlier and brought them back on board. And, you know, it's never good. It's going to cost you a lot of money to rehire somebody if you don't hire the right person. It's also going to cause, you know, you're going to upset the apple cart, like I said earlier. You may upset the patients and the staff within the office. So reactive is really not taking the time to find someone. And you're going to fall into that category often.
Yeah.
But if you're doing your networking, you're doing your diligence, and there's sources out there like a dent reps and other job boards out there,
yeah,
or even association websites where you can actually, you know, let's always constantly be looking. You know, I have a good friend, he's a mentor, ABT, always be testing, always be networking, and bringing people into your practice because you never know when you're going to need that. And I consider that more of a proactive hire. You know, maybe it's someone you talked to a year ago that you happen to bring in, and maybe they're a patient or a friend of a patient, but you've known them for a while. Those are always the good hires because you can pull the trigger real quick.
So one thing that I need to do is build my network, because that allows me in my local neighborhood, local community to have a big hiring pool. Another thing I need to do is check all of the job boards that are out there, right? I mean, there's probably a bunch of them. And I know you're a really generous guy with networking and sharing. So Dent Reps is one of the more popular job boards out there for dental practices. And that's, you know, the one that you founded. What are some other locations where people can go to find, you know, jobs in case they don't see maybe talent available in their community through your site?
Absolutely. I mean, LinkedIn is the biggest free site in the world, and it's the best site. We work with LinkedIn pretty closely and providing content to them. So LinkedIn's a good place. Association websites. You can go to your North Dakota Association website.
Yeah, a lot of association websites will have job boards, right?
Absolutely. Yep. You know, you want to use, if it's free, it's for me.
Yeah.
And you can use places like Dentaltown.
Yeah.
Word of mouth is always the best. You know, some of the best dental offices out there, unfortunately, I can't believe I'm about to say this, but sometimes they just don't post a job because they're doing the right things. They're networking.
Yeah.
And they're using all the resources available to them. Hey, the reason I started this was I simply, in 2002, I was working with a group practice, and one of the doctors had got sick. His doctor's wife had got sick, and they were in Wisconsin, had to move back to Miami. And he came up to me and he said, "Hey, do you know anybody hiring in the Miami area?" And I said, "I don't know, but let me reach out to my contacts." And sure enough, they were hiring. It happened to be a group practice down in Florida, and they connected, and they hired him, and there he was for 8 years as a direct dental director. And I said, there's a business opportunity. So a lot of doctors use the network of your consultants, your sales reps, your people that are coming and going in your office, who knows the industry better than people that are in 10, 12, 15 offices a day?
Yeah, and they've got, some of them have 10 to 20 years of industry experience networking with people in and out of state at trade shows and everywhere. Sometimes I think it's easy to assume too that you need to hire from within your local market when a lot of people are willing to get on a plane and relocate for a great job.
Absolutely. It's if you asked me to come work for you today and move to Utah and do some skiing, I absolutely would. Yes.
If the price is right, there's always snow has a way of discounting that that salary a little bit. Okay.
That'd be a reactive hire and a reactive
for both of us
acceptance too in the same time. We don't even need to talk about compensation. But
that just follows.
It's just bring the white stuff.
You're paid in snow. I like it.
Yeah, you know, and part of it is I think for me, what I've learned from some of the hires that I have made is you don't always need necessarily dental experience to come into a dental practice.
Yeah.
Some people know the ropes. I came into dentistry in 2002. I had done sales for about 6 or 7 years. I knew everything about business. I have an MBA. I thought I knew everything about business. I worked for Oracle. I worked for some great companies, private. And I came into dentistry and I didn't know the clinical aspect of it, but I brought my
business expertise.
Absolutely. My acumen, my business
acumen. I think people, especially when we're talking about an office manager hire or front office hire, I mean, it's probably more important that they have business experience or marketing experience or some kind of administrative, like strong administrative experience, than it is even dental specific. Like you can have a dental specific office manager that's been in the industry for 15 years that will shortcut their learning curve in some areas, but also bring some biases where they may not have as much of an open mind towards marketing strategy or to operations or to process management, where sometimes a traditional business, because there's so much more rigor and expectation on processes and marketing, you know, sometimes you bring different skills, I guess, to the table.
Absolutely. And you bring different experiences too.
Yeah.
What worked in the past and what didn't. And you also bring a little bit of, you bring a lot of passion and change is good. They always say change is very good for a practice, especially that small where everyone's working together and differences are good. Opposites attract.
What's the largest category or occupation, or we'll call it job, that you hire inside of a practice? What's the most popular like need?
Yeah. So we started off with working with a lot of group practices and we've expanded completely to private practices, obviously, as well. You know, for group practices, part of the issue is all about production, right?
Yeah.
If you don't have a butt in the seat with a dentist producing, you're not making the money.
Yeah.
Private practice is the same way, except you're kind of looking at it from a different perspective where it's more growth.
Mm-hmm.
If you have another associate come in, you're typically growing your practice or replacing someone that has left to maintain that.
Is it harder to help find associates than it is to find office managers or hygienists or assistants or front office?
You know, it's all about region. It's all about timing. And those are the two biggest things in the world.
So let's just start with I'm hiring an associate. I want to hire an associate. What are some advice on this timing and region? I'm just curious.
Sure. You know, a lot of stigma is behind job boards that associates, dentists don't look at job boards. But, you know, the way the internet's the way of the world, what 85% of people in America have access to the internet.
Mm-hmm.
So everyone is looking and mobile friendly. Again, it's all about building that relationship with your network. It's all about reaching out to your community. It's all about providing maybe potential job postings on a job board well before you actually need that. Yeah. If you think you're a private practice and you want to grow, you know that not tomorrow, you know that long time ago. So you should be looking at building that network for now.
Where do you find that new associates today that are graduating, where are they going to look for jobs? Where are they going to look?
It's a great question. I spend a lot of time at universities whenever I'm in the area. For example, I was at Southern Illinois University, I believe it was last year, right before they had a student day. And I said, hey, where are you going after college, or where are you going to look for a job? Well, I'm going to go to Chicago. So I'll probably just look in the, you know, local trade rag, or, you know, I have a lot of friends that are there. I have other colleagues. I'll put my name out for a job board. So they're looking at different places. They look to their school a lot. But when 90% of your class is going to Chicago, a major metropolitan city where, you know, the active patient base is sometimes less than 500.
Yeah.
You know, it's difficult. I think a lot of the new students really need to open up and look at every opportunity that's out there and find the right fit for themselves. even if it's an hour outside of Chicago, you can still live in Chicago. You can still live in Manhattan, but drive an hour or take the train or whatever, because the opportunity for growth, learning, different specialties, different processes within the place, and also you can have more opportunity for more money in a practice that is fit for you than just forcing yourself into a hole.
So sometimes you're saying they know where they want to go. They know what city they want to go to. So they target that area rather than being a little bit more open-minded. That's been your experience?
100%, yes.
Okay.
Yeah, that's what
so
I found.
I want to go to Florida, so that's where I'm going. How do you quantify the, you know, hiring, the kind of the cost of hiring someone that's bad or having the wrong fit? Because I've definitely made that mistake before, and looking back over a year or two of spinning my wheels and maybe feeling like, you know, that was really expensive. It wasn't just the salary. There was other costs there, right, that I ate through my staff, through opportunity costs, through benefits, through whatever. I mean, how do you quantify some of that? I mean, I've just kind of listed things that I felt.
Yep.
And I'm sure you kind of can resonate with that.
You know, regardless of what the salary is, it's definitely a burden to your practice whenever you do hire the wrong fit.
Yeah.
And maybe you did hire the right fit, but they found out it wasn't the right fit for themselves after 6 months.
Circumstances could have changed too.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think the industry standard, or the standard for in the recruiting or hiring field, is that it takes about 90 days to receive a job. So if a doctor finds out that their assistant is leaving today, they give a 2-week notice. How long is it going to be before that actual new assistant comes in? So you want to quantify what your loss of production is based on not having that assistant. Then the cost of taking your office manager away from and your time from interviewing that person, there's an opportunity cost for you too there.
Yeah.
Then you want to go through the interviewing process, the number of people, the amount of money it spends on job boards or recruiting, whatever it may be, getting your name out there. So all those come with an associated cost. So it could be anywhere from 10 to 50% of the actual person's salary in terms of what you have.
Yeah.
Once they come into the practice, think about on the onboarding. I think one of the most important things for hiring in any world is onboarding.
Yeah.
The proper onboarding, that you have the right person, and all that costs money. And then you lose that person, now you're gonna start that over again, so you just doubled your cost.
Yeah, so let's talk a little bit about if I were to hire a professional, you know, hiring manager or staff placement company like yours, and I wanted to have you help me find talent, bring talent in. You know, how do I pay for that? Like, what does that cost me? How do you guys price your service? How do other people price their services? You know, not if I want to do job postings and listings and pay for postings or pay for names, but if I want to actually get someone placed and have someone take it all off my plate, soup to nuts. You know, what does that look like for me?
Absolutely. I think the first thing I always do with a doctor is that I make sure you set the right expectations. So we have Dent Reps and we have the sister company of DR Recruiting. And I never thought of myself as being a recruiter, but so many of my clients ask me to take it off their back.
Yeah.
Which I correct them right away, because taking something off their back, you want them to be as involved as they can be.
Yeah.
You want to take away the administration part of it. And that's exactly what I set the expectation to, because no one knows your practice better than you, doctor,
but,
or the office manager.
I'm just curious hearing you say this, because we've experienced this somewhat ourselves. So we have a pretty large client base of people that say, I want you to take care of all my financial stuff, right? But then we've had a lot of cases where we have to go back and say, well, we can't take away everything. Like, there has to be some involvement. Are you saying that you made that comment that you kind of have to clarify expectations? Does that come from experience of having people want it to just be off their plate completely, and you find someone and you deal with everything?
Absolutely.
Okay. Is that common?
Yes, especially in this industry.
Yeah.
There's so little time to do so, that there's so much to be done.
They just want to pay for it to be done and not have to do anything.
This
right?
is what I'm paying you for.
Yeah.
Well, yes, and I agree. I agree.
I hear that a lot.
Well, you know, at the same time, I can't help you eat, walk, and sleep at the same time. But, you know, I'm here to help you. I'm a resource.
Okay.
I'm a sales guy. I'm all about solving your goals, problems, and needs, but I can't.
Okay, so I guess me and you have experienced that both at some level. I don't say that in a super negative way. It's not an overly common trait. There's probably a minority of people who want to have no involvement whatsoever, right? But tell me a little bit about what can be outsourced, and, you know, versus what do I have to keep on my plate?
Absolutely. You know, I think you want to take ownership of the process, at least, and be involved at some point, no matter who you are.
Knowing what's going on.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And who's coming in. Because you're going to have to, depending on who the person is, you're going to have to work with that person, whether you're the office manager, whether you're the assistant, hygienist, whatever it may be.
I may not have to do the first interview. I may not have to do the first screening process. But, you know, at some point during that process, I need to get engaged.
There's no better way of building a team. If you're an office manager, if you're an owner of a dental practice and a doctor, there's no better way to engage your team than to let them take on some initiatives as well. I mean, you want them to be part of it too. In the perfect world, it's not always the case, but in a perfect world, you want that to happen. You can outsource, for example, on the DR recruiting side. We'll actually have a conversation with you up front, so the ownership starts right away. What are you looking for? What's your goals, problems, and needs? What's your value? What's your mission statement? If you don't have the answers to those, then how am I going to find someone that's going to fit your practice?
Yeah.
And I'm just relaying this to you.
Don't most people have kind of similar, well, I just want a good office manager, or I just want a good associate. I just want a good dental assistant. So find me that. Like, why do I have to have, it doesn't, and what's your, I guess your, do you get told that sometimes?
Absolutely. I think probably not.
Why do I have to tell you, like, who to find? Just find me someone.
Yeah. They need to know Eaglesoft or Dantrex, and they have to come in at 8 and maybe they have to work late. I could tell you exactly what they tell me in the first conversation. So it's a matter of breaking that barrier and saying, I'm here for you. So yeah, you can outsource a lot of things. So once we get that information and we know who we're looking for, we can certainly, you know, try and source those candidates, find those candidates. Let's build a talent pool of candidates for you and provide them with some decent candidates. Get the first screening through. Try and qualify those candidates. If it's just a number of 10 questions, 15-minute conversation, run through those candidates, screen each one of those, and then do another one as the recruiter. We can outsource that to the recruiter, and we'll do that for you. We'll have a second round of interview questions specific to the practice, and hey, a lot of questions towards the candidate. But I'm also asking the candidate to ask questions of us.
Okay, so backing up just so I can kind of get this down, because I'm slow. Okay, I'm not as bright as some of the people you're probably talking to every day. But I want to hire you guys to help me do this process. Are you going to find all the people for me, or am I going to have to go find the people and then tell you who I found?
We're actually going to find all the people for you.
Okay, so you're going to bring me a list of people that fit my criteria that I have explained to you and talked to you about up front.
Absolutely.
And then when you bring me those people, you're going to do the initial screening on those candidates for me?
Yes.
And then if I want that to happen. And then you can do a second screening?
Absolutely. Narrow the candidate pool down to, you know, 2 or 3.
So what's the first interview? What are you trying to target in that first interview when you're trying to narrow them down?
Depends on who you're looking for, but qualifications?
So mostly technical skills, qualifications, education, and background.
Values.
Just to meet the minimum standards of what we'd consider a quality hire.
Absolutely.
And then second would be more diving into a little bit deeper into values and determining whether they fit the practice culture or how does it differ?
The first one's kind of service level.
Okay.
Second one is diving into finding who you are.
Okay.
And not by saying or spraying or just asking you questions, but having you tell me a story of who you are so I can, you know, spin my wheels and see if you're going to be a good fit for that practice.
Okay. Then what happens?
From there, we'll submit each candidate directly to whoever the hiring manager is. At that point, they'll take a look at who they are, what their qualifications are, their CV, their resume. I give a whole background of the conversations that I've had over time and why I feel like they're a fit for that particular office as much as I know that office. From there, it's an internal discussion. We set up an interview process where I like to have the entire team involved, if that can be the case, where they'll actually go in and do a face-to-face meeting. And then from that point, they'll meet each one of the teams, get to know that person. Again, depending on who the actual person is and what role it is, go through the entire team for that one day, leave.
They'll have individual kind of sit-down sessions to chat with each team member?
Either or you could have a team environment as well.
Yeah,
absolutely. Okay. You get a lot of vibe because for me in sales, it's all about your meeting someone and seeing their facial expressions.
Yeah.
And how you respond to answers and questions and who you are.
The recruiting manager, when you say that, you're talking about an internal person to DR recruiting,
yes.
Not someone locally. So all the people in the staff then give feedback to that recruiting manager about what they experienced in addition to the feedback that the recruiter gives the hiring manager?
That's the best case scenario, yeah.
Okay.
And then whoever is hiring that person or the owner of the practice will give a thumbs up or down. And
And then who extends the offer typically?
It's probably someone like the office manager.
Okay.
Unless you're hiring the office manager, then at that point, you're going to have the owner of the practice or the manager, regional manager of the practice, extend the offer to that particular person.
Do you tend to do that in writing or verbal?
Absolutely. You know, I think it's all about getting right everything in writing these days.
Yeah.
And even taking it one step further now, too. I work with a great company called Prosper Dent, and David runs a great operation over there. It's unfortunate. His team has grown because of the amount of embezzlement that's gone on in the world.
Yeah.
And whether it's an assistant, an associate, an office manager, or even someone that's a friend, family friend, you really got to do your due diligence. So you want to have something in writing from a lawyer from an offer letter perspective, and it could be a standard template describing everything that's required of the job physically, as well as times, and so there's no miscommunication. But also do a background check on these people if you get to that level, because you don't know who you have coming into your office. I could give you case by case of stories that I've heard in dentistry, but also in the veterinarian world. You don't know who you're working with, and you know you want to try and find out as much as possible.
What are you putting to that offer? You're saying you want to find out as much about that person, doing background checks and stuff, but what are you putting in that offer letter in writing that made you mention the embezzlement stuff?
Yeah, so you want to talk about compensation. You want to talk about, you do your due diligence. You want to be able to put in the offer letter that they, by coming on board, you agree to doing various background checks. And a background check, we call it a profile research, because that's really what it is. We have 7 different exams or tests or records that we look into, whether it be county, state, or federal, that we actually are digging into. And you need permission from that candidate in order to make sure that you can do that background check. Because if they don't give permission to that, it's your first sign that it's probably not the right fit.
So let's say I'm going to hire a $50,000 office manager, and we've got through this process soup to nuts, and you found the person for me. What does that end up costing me roughly, you know, with your firm and then with other firms? Like how is this priced?
What do Absolutely. I pay? So depending on the level of who you are, I think I could give a general description of pricing across the industry.
Okay.
You could go anywhere. The average, let's say the median of a staff member, an office manager, assistant, hygienist, on a full recruiting basis where you're taking over a majority of the work, but you still have ownership, is anywhere from $3,000 to $5,000 roughly.
Okay.
That's on a contingency basis.
Okay.
And a contingency basis simply means that you don't pay the recruiting firm until they actually hire someone and put them into that chair.
Okay.
And it's typically you pay them on the first day, or you can spread it out across a payment plan.
Okay. So if I'm hiring somebody, I'll spend between, you know, $3,000 and $5,000. And on a $40,000 hire or $50,000 hire, I mean, that's going to be less than 10% of my payroll for 1 year.
Absolutely.
Is that correct?
Yes.
Do dentists know that, I mean, as a general rule, like across recruiting, I mean, that's not always the typical norm for recruiting firms. Many of them work on a percentage basis, right?
Correct.
And that percentage can sometimes be as high as 30% of 1 year's annual payroll.
20 and 30%.
Yeah. And so does the dental industry typically just pay less as a product of dentists not wanting to really pay for professional recruiting? Or is there a reason it's also less expensive for the dental industry?
It's a great question, and it's one I haven't figured out. But, you know, when you come into this, and like I said, we never evolved into – we didn't think we were going to evolve into a recruiting company. So I had to do my diligence on what to expect across the industry. It's majority of it's flat fee in dentistry, actually.
Yeah.
Where associates can be anywhere from 10 to 15,000, and specialists can range anywhere from 15 to 20.
Yeah.
On the executive level, within some of the larger organizations, whether it's a sales organization or a group practice, DSO, whatever it may be, it could be based on a compensation package of 20% of their salary, which a majority of these people are getting paid very well. So
yeah.
Not until you get to the executive level with the business person are you paying anything percentage, but you can run across it. Typically, it's a flat fee.
Yeah. And it's just a big value that in my mind, you know, it's not something that for the amount that it costs, even if it's just a second set of eyes and accountability to a process that you should follow. I mean, it just usually hiring in a dental office is pretty, it's pretty loose, and the process isn't overly formal, which sometimes can affect the longevity of the employee, even if it is the right fit.
Absolutely.
It just feels like it was kind of a, you know, a, a reflex rather than a really thoughtful effort that they put into hiring someone.
It's a great point. And, you know, we always talk about as sales representatives or as recruiters, we're consultants. We're consulting you or your office or your staff of who may be the best fit for you. It is another pair of eyes, just like you said. Another step to that, too, is if you have a consultant within your business, I assume you guys consider yourselves consultants to finances of a practice and of a person. A lot of my dentists that I work with and ask me to bring on our recruiting services to them will actually involve their consultant, too, because it's a third set of eyes that's outside the office that sees it from a different angle and who this person might be.
Yeah.
So it's good to spread the wealth in terms of making sure you're trying to find the right fit. And there's no perfect solution. There's no answer to it 100%. But if you're doing that diligence, you can feel better about yourself at the end of the day.
Talk to me about, and this might be hard data to that might not be available readily in every location, but how many people do you think a dentist hires throughout their career? Like how many times do they hire? It varies, you know, based on turnover, but I mean, I've got clients that seem like 50% of their staff's turning over every year.
Yeah, absolutely. You know?
But tell me what the kind of your guess or your perspective, if there is any data on how many people dentists hire, you know, throughout their career.
I've heard data before, but I take it from what I see.
What's your gut feel tell you anecdotally as you look?
I suggest that there's probably every 18 months a dentist or an office manager is hiring someone new within that practice.
Okay.
I'd say that's a pretty average.
That's conservative.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And sometimes when it rains, it pours. You know, it's such a small, tight-knit 10 to 12 people in an office.
Yeah.
Typically.
I mean, if you got a 30 or 40 person ortho practice, you're going to be hiring more frequently, and
yep,
it's probably a percentage of at some level of the number of people that they have.
Yeah. Absolutely. If you have a 3 to 4 operatory average practice, it's probably every 18 months, but it's so tight knit that if the office manager is really good friends with the assistants, then they may go as well. And
yeah,
it's a high stress.
They might just switch roles one day.
Absolutely.
It's like, you be the assistant now, I'm going to be the office manager. I've seen that happen. It's like, seriously? We're just kind of swapping roles, you know? Well, I don't really, my office manager's leaving. Well, maybe my assistant can be the new office manager. It happens all the time.
It's true. And you know, you talk about building your network, and maybe your network is right there in front of you.
Yeah.
Because cross-training is becoming one of the bigger things of it. I don't think it's been formal within the industry, but it'd be great to have a formal process where you're learning everyone's role, yeah, where you can step in and figure out their insurance. If you're an assistant, if you're the doctor, you can sit and answer the phone.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever done this, but if you've had a doctor sit behind the desk for an hour over lunch and answer the phone, it's not easy.
No.
And you do the same thing. I mean, obviously you can't step in and start doing endo or crowns and third molar extractions, but
yeah,
you should know a decent amount. So that way when things do happen, your team, you help pick up the pieces. And that's what it's all about, is finding the right fit where someone's going to hop in and take over when the time is needed.
Right on. Well, Pete, this has been great insight. We've covered a lot of information, and I think I've given people a lot of things to think about. Is there anything you'd like to let the listeners go with in parting here? Any last pieces of advice?
Yeah, you know, I think it's I've been part of dentistry for 15 years now.
Uh-huh.
I say that under my breath, but It's a phenomenal industry. It's one of the fastest growing industries out there and continuously growing. Anywhere from 16 to 22% of employment growth is expected over the next 5 years here, according to records. You know, it's important that you're trying to find the right fit. It's important you work with the right people. It's all about communicating and networking. But most importantly for us, I built this company on values of loyalty, passion, integrity. And you need to keep those within the industry. But it also goes to social responsibility, and I think that's important for everybody out there. And when you do pick a company, you know, find out what their values are, find out what their missions are. Are you aligning you as a practice with other companies that you work with the same values and core values? Giving back is one of our favorite things in the world, and we work with a lot of different organizations. I just rushed in here. I was 3 minutes early just because every Thursday I volunteer at Boston Children's Hospital. And I'll tell you that the experiences that I see, it's all about giving back, and it's dent reps that gives back. It's not just me. It's dent reps because it takes time away from us, and it's important. I sat with a 14-year-old kid that was blind and has some severe mental disability, but you know, he was singing and jumping and praising. It makes you a better person, I think. And it shows you what life is really all about and that life is not so bad when you're working. So it's all about giving back and social responsibility. So
That's cool.
Try and provide that a lot. And, you know, here in Boston, one of my good friends is Heather Abbott, who was part of the Boston Marathon bombing.
Yeah.
I had several friends that were there, and she was there, and she, unfortunately, she lost her limb. But, you know, she's a better person for it. We try and help her out. We try and help as many people out as possible. I think that's something that we try and convey to the industry, to people, personal and professional, and that's important.
Well, Pete, you got a big heart, man. We appreciate all the information and knowledge you shared today, and I look forward to having you back, and we'll stay in touch.
Am I invited skiing out west?
I'm going to bring you out, man.
We'll shred it.
Okay, man. Thanks for coming on again, Pete. We'll
Reese, see you thanks soon. A lot. I appreciate it.